Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. To the Carpcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Good. It's feeling a bit milder outside, a lot better than my attempt at fishing this week, in which it was just northerlies, easterlies that absolutely cut you in half, and all I managed was another big dirty bream. You've been doing manual labour. How does that feel?
Yeah, it's not good. I've not been fishing this week because I'm moving house. I've got a deadline. I've got 5 days left. I did a week's work and realised I wasn't going to be finished in time, so I've had to get an extra decorator in who's going to tidy up all the mess that I've done. He's already rung me twice today. He's like, do you want me to redo these walls? Because, you know, there's a few bits missed. And I was like, yeah, you know what you're doing. Crack on. So, no fishing for me, but I think I've timed it right because the weather's been horrible, isn't it? It was 4.5 degrees one morning here. There's been frost every night. I think we're actually behind for the 1st of May. I don't think the water temperatures are what is kind of average for this time of year, would you agree?
Yeah, well, they're still going the right direction. I mean, I didn't take any temperatures last week while I was there, but apart from sticking my hand in the water, and it still feels cold, but it does feel like it is going the right way. It's warming up, and also there's bits of the, like, you know, the filamentous algae that's starting to bubble up and hit the surface a little bit. Or it was when I got there. It wasn't when I'd after 2 days of, you know, winds that just, it was, they're just winds that were wrong for this time of year. I was on the back of them, but there was still, you know, it put the cart completely off. And I think there was like one fish out at the weekend before to quite a few anglers. But you know what's funny? The bream anglers are having it off at the minute.
Yeah, you being one of them.
No, I'm not one of them. But no, mind saying that, you know, the bream out there, the average size is, well, one fella, I don't know how long he was on, I'm assuming, you know, a good 2-3 night session, but he had 21 bream, 19 of them double figures, up to 15. We're not fans of bream by any stretch, but if you're not impressed by a fish like that, you need to take your head for a wobble. You know, they are big bream.
So there's been plenty on the net this week. Probably the most important one, the most significant thing we've seen is the death of Jan Porter, who's been struggling with cancer for a few years. It looked like he was clear, but clearly it's come back. And you can see the love and the fondness that people remember him by, you know, just on Facebook. He's extremely fondly remembered from what I've seen.
Yeah, definitely. And man, I didn't speak to him, but I did see him on the Shimano stand at Five Lakes, and you know, he looked quite well, to be honest. Although, you know, going back, I remember him from his days as the man in red, and, you know, he used to, you know, dominate the Trent matches, and, you know, he's someone who everyone speaks really nicely of, and not just because he's passed, but they did anyway, and, you know, someone I've certainly looked up to from a distance for a long time, even before I got into carping.
Yeah, I mean, he started his life as a match angler. He did move into specimen fishing of sort of all types, including carp, later on, and he was definitely an all-round catcher, wasn't he? And I watched a couple of YouTube videos about his life story, really, where he's been interviewed. And there's a lot of similarities that I related to in the interview. He describes himself as a failed rock musician, which is probably an accurate description of me. You know, he thought he was going to be famous for a little while. He was clearly very good. You know, guitarist amongst other things, and was in a band, and much like I was in the sort of 80s, early 90s, and you know, had delusions of grandeur. But you know, you admit that late on in life that there's a very small chance of probably becoming you know, successful. I made a living out of music, certainly for a lot of years, but and you know, I related to a lot of his philosophy. He seems like a, you know, an old hippie, all round nice guy, very, very much into people, which is probably why he's so loved. And it's interesting hearing the Man in Red story as well. His friend was a marketing guy, and it was very deliberate. He started off with a red hat at first, and everybody commented on it, and he went all out Father Christmas style, Santa Claus. And he says in the interview that he didn't realise that, that the reason why Father Christmas is red was a marketing gimmick by Coca-Cola in the first place. Santa Claus was never red until Coca-Cola made us believe he was, which I thought was quite interesting. I'm interested in all that, especially the marketing stuff, because most of the marketing techniques we use now are from Sigmund Freud, how do you describe him? Sigmund Freud's nephew was a guy called Edward Bernays, who's probably the he's responsible for the way all advertising's done now, and he did it all based on Sigmund Freud's work, who was his uncle. All sorts of stuff this is a diversification even for us, meandering off, but yeah, I find it pretty interesting, all that stuff. But yeah, Jan Porter certainly took tips from his marketing friend, and that was why he it was a deliberate marketing ploy. There was a great story on there once, actually, of this plane. I think Jan was into engines. He knew about engines. I think, did he work for Rolls-Royce or one of the engine manufacturers at some point? But he heard this plane flying about in the sky, and he recognised the engine sound or whatever from, you know, something he'd followed, and this plane actually landed in the field. He was in a match on one of the rivers or canals or somewhere, and this plane actually landed in the field behind him, and the next thing you know, the pilot stood by him, and the pilot's basically seen his red outfit, like top to bottom from the sky, and realised it was Jan Porter, who was one of his sort of heroes, and parked in the field behind him and walked up to say hello and chatted him for a bit, and off he went. He took off again and flew off. So I mean, that's how noticeable is the man in red was, which I thought was a great story, really, because he'd kind of clocked this plane anyway, because he had a passing interest, and the guy landed behind him and came to speak to him in the match. He said he caught nothing as well in that one. He said it was such rubbish. But yeah, it was a great interview. If you it's definitely worth a look.
You're going to have to send me a link to that one, though. Even post it on our page.
Yeah, I think it was either Anglin Times or Angler's Mail. It was on YouTube, I found it. And they've done a load of matches. There's a few match guys on there. There's Tommy Pickering. It's basically like an interview, life story. And Jan's sat in his living room. He's got his guitar around him. He's got some of his old classic reels and just a picture of kind of all of his stuff around him. And I thought, yeah, what a really level-headed, nice guy. And I think being as it's the last show of the month, and we the end of last month, we introduced the CCIWOF, which is the Carpcast Internet Wall of Fame, where we're putting significant people onto our wall, not to rival any other Hall of Fame, but just our own little one that we're going to keep a collection of on www.thecarpcast.com. You can go and have a look. Last month we inducted Lenny Middleton in.
Indicted, a Freudian slip, is it?
I don't know. You're a villain. We inducted Lenny Middleton into the Wall of Fame, and I think it's only right. He wasn't an out-and-out carp angler, but certainly a guy everybody's got fond memories of, and I think he's a deserving, has a deserving place on our wall, don't you think?
Carp fishing.
It's on the net. It must be true.
So, what else have we seen on the net?
Should we revisit Bray shots? Because that seems to have caused a bit of a disagreement again.
Yes. You see this one? I did see this one, yeah. It's on my list of things that I'd spotted this week on the net. Do you want to tell us what you saw?
Yeah, it was... Darrell Peck made a comment, basically, you know, disagreeing with Bray shots, which, you know, the usual internet trolls jumped on, and then was it Ollie defended Bray shots, which internet trolls jumped on, and it went around the usual circles. But we had a chat, before recording the other day. Our opinions on Bray shots. You've told quite an interesting story. Do you want to repeat that one?
So basically what's happened with this, Darrell Peck's made an opinion, he didn't have a pop at anyone in particular, no personal digs at anyone, and his actual wording was, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the increasing amount of Bray shots that I keep seeing, which I actually think is a fair point, and I'll tell you why. It's because I remember fishing a lake called Sandmere when I was a kid. It's a northwest mare, quite well stocked it was then. I've no idea now what it's like, but remember jumping on there. I'd seen, remember those Billingsgate shots where you had like four or five fish in front of you in the magazines? There was one particularly famous one. It was one of the either Richie McDonald or Pete Springate shots. It was one of the well-known ones that was kind of doing the round when I was a kid, which is, I was probably like 14 years old, so maybe mid-80s. And I had about 5-6 fish, and because of what I'd seen in the magazines, I wanted one of those shots. So I was catching these fish, which were probably 5 to 7, 8 pound at the time. I had a rake of them. I kept them all in a carp sack, in one carp sack, which was, you know, clearly I'm older and wiser now, which is not a good thing to do. And I knew my dad was coming to collect me first thing in the morning. So I kept these things in the sack. Some of them were probably in the sack all night, and were extremely lively when my dad arrived to pick me up at 9 a.m. But this is my point of not endorsing this. I'm telling you something that I did that was a really bad thing. All because of what I'd seen in a magazine. Now, I wanted that shot, you know, or a relative shot. There were probably 30s and 20s, you know, that I'd seen in the mag. But and I attempted to do one of these shots with these, and this is pre carp cradles or mats in those days. There were no mats, you know. If you were lucky, you laid either a carp sack or your net on the grass, you know, simple as that. And these fish were so lively, they were all over the place, I couldn't control them. I ended up just having to put them back without the picture. The point is I did that off the back of the press. And, you know, I was young and naive, didn't know any different. I'd never attempted to keep a fish all night. But so, A, it encourages you to retain fish, to try and get that shot when it's not necessary to retain a fish. And B, you know, a less experienced angler is going to struggle with a group of fish on the bank, and especially if they've been sacked for, you know, anything more than half an hour, the fish get lively. So this debate kicked off on Darrell's. So I missed all the horrible comments. Apparently there were lots. The post got deleted, and Darrell made another post saying, "Wow, I can't even have an opinion on something." And I feel for him, because he should be able to have an opinion without people jumping down his throat. And some people were saying it was kind of a Nash versus Corder thing, and I was like, why would that be? And then I remembered there's a great shot of the latest Nash Urban Banks, where Ollie had he had a brace of fish. You know, you can see him catch the fish. He catches it. Well, yeah, basically has two at the same time. He's literally put one in the net and the other goes, so they both end up being in the net. Now, in that circumstance, I'm probably going to have a brace shot myself, because it was a genuine brace, one after the other. There's a big crowd of people around. It makes a good shot. Now, with the Nash guys there, Alan, Ollie and everyone, I know 100% those fish are in the safest hands they can possibly be. They've also just been caught, so the actual likelihood of them going crazy on the bank is almost zero, because you know the two fish that are tired out, they've just been caught. It's a genuine brace, two fish in the net at the same time, and they got some fantastic footage. But looking back to my story, if that shot and that picture encourages somebody less experienced or to try and recreate a fantastic event, somebody tries to recreate that, you know, like I did when I was a kid, and you know, they don't have two fish in the net at the same time, they catch one at 8 o'clock at night and they know they're probably going to get a bite at first light, so they keep a fish retained all night and then attempt to get the picture. This is where I think people in the public eye have a responsibility to what you would call the lowest common denominator. I think you have to cater for the lowest common denominator. And while Alan, Ollie and the Nash guys made some fantastic footage, some of the best footage I've ever seen, that Urban Banks, you've got to cater for the 15-year-old lad that you know, tries to recreate that because he's impressed by it, as I was, as everybody was. And this is the problem, and it's a very fine line. You know, Ollie and Alan should be allowed to take fantastic footage because it happened, that's how it happened. But Darryl's also allowed an opinion going, I don't think it sets a good example for the, you know, younger and naive in the sport, or maybe not so young. And that's my little rant on the subject. It's I can see both sides of it. Why it got bitchy on Darryl's page, I have no idea. He should be entitled to an opinion as a decent thinking angler. It's a shame that he can't have an opinion without people jumping down his throat.
Yeah, you know, that's quite a tame run by your standards as well.
It's because it's an extremely logical subject. I see both sides of it.
It is, yeah.
You know, it's and I know how the situation with Alan and Holly. I mean, I don't think Darryl was having a pop at Alan and Ollie. I really don't. But you know, he said the increase in amount, and maybe it is increasing because of stuff people have seen in the mag. One of the most iconic shots of all time was
Springate.
Pete Springate, yeah.
Which one of his braces? He had the Yovedi brace, and there's Mary and Mary's mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Iconic.
Iconic, yeah, and. You know, I think there's an argument for it. If you end up with two fish in one net, possibly, but sure, I don't know. I'm actually 50-50 as to whether, even if it happens like that, whether, you know, you should, yeah, take your own picture, but whether you should be putting that in the press.
Yeah, to me, I think we should set the example of not doing brace shots. For the very reason you spelt out, you have to cater for the people who, well, I'm not sure lowest common denominator is a fair term, but you know, that's pretty much sums it up. You know, people are going to try and recreate it and go about it the wrong way with not knowing any better.
So yeah, I think in fishing we always have to cater for the lowest common denominator. If you own a lake,
in life,
yeah. If you own a lake and the majority of that lake is extremely good anglers, or say a day ticket lake, you know that 85% of the people fishing it can probably use lead core really safely, but you would have to ban lead core for the 5, 10, 15% of people that are gonna, you know, use it not so safely, or you know, that they're not the greatest anglers, they maybe don't fish regular, maybe don't change the line, you know, from one year to the next, and they get more crack offs or cut offs than everyone else because, you know, they're not a super sharp angler. I mean, that guy using lead core is going to leave a rig, baited rig in the lake at some point, or in a fish. That is going to happen. And sadly, you do have to, you know, when making rules or setting precedents, you kind of have to do it to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, that's true. You know, if I had a lake, lead core and any sort of lead would be the first on the banned list.
Yeah, but what if only me and you fished that lake? Would any need to ban it then?
I'd ban bait boats to start with.
maybe you like them now. I've seen the evidence. But do you get my point? Like, if only me, you and Roger fish the lake, there'd be no rules, would there?
No, we'd have about 10 rods of power east, and we'd have to designate an area out of bounds just for you to fish.
10 rods east, that kind of brings me on to something else that I've seen on the net this week. Created a stir, and has since been deleted. And I have an opinion on it, as I do about everything. But
it's on the net. It must be true.
British Carp Champs, which I believe is the name for the old Eric's comp. It seems to be one of the better comps in the country now. It seems to be one of the most popular, for sure. They had a qualifier last week. Have you seen this, Mark?
I've not seen this one, no. You're enlightening me.
I'd be interested to get your opinion then. They had a qualifier. Rod licences were checked during this qualifier.
So they should.
Four people, they were checked by the EA. The EA came round.
I would. Yeah. It makes sense.
Four of the people fishing did not have a rod licence. As I'm aware, they've been prosecuted, but the EA, because of the match circumstance, because they had previously owned rod licences for the last few years, so, you know, it looked more like an oversight rather than a deliberate attempt not to buy them. The EA allowed them to carry on fishing the match. Three out of the four people qualified. Now, it specifically states in the rules that you must have a rod licence. In the Carp Championships rules, it actually specifically states that's a rule. I know Rob Hughes introduced into his, when he used to own the British Carp Angling Champs, BCAC, I know he introduced that rule. And one of the reasons why it's in there is because you fish in pairs and you fish two rods each, four rods in the swim, you need to have two rod licences, because if the other guys, quite often you're all fishing with all four rods, so if one guy's making the food or shot off to, you know, toilet, colour, nature, whatever, the other guy's generally in charge of four rods. So, I mean, it actually specifically states in the BCAC rules you have to have two rod licences per person, because, you know, at some point during the match you're going to be in charge of four rods if you're fishing in a pair. Now, it's quite a logical rule. It's a criminal matter to not own a rod licence. And anyway, they made a statement on their website this week that was deleted, but I had it screenshotted, that they've allowed these people to qualify. And they made that decision based on the fact that the EA allowed them to continue fishing. So they're basically, they're endorsing a breaking of one of their own rules. You're hearing this for the first time. What's your opinion on that?
I'm quite surprised the EA let them fish on. You know, if you're pulled over by the police, they check your car licence, you haven't got one, they're not going to let you off. Fair enough, you've had one before, you can drive off. You know, they've broke the law, they've broke the rules, you shouldn't have been allowed to fish, and, if I was in that match, I'd be quite pissed off.
Well, yes, that's exactly the case. There are a lot of people pissed off. I've seen it kick up on Facebook since the post has been deleted. I've seen other people saying that, you know, those three should be all four should be disqualified, the three that went through should be took out and everything else moved up. I'm also, my biggest concern is the same as what you've just said there, and that's somebody's trying to ring me, and that's that I can't believe that EA allowed them to continue. I mean, this is not a civil matter. This is a criminal offence.
Yeah, I think they could have solved any problems by, you know, going by the rules and not letting them fish when they didn't have a licence. I mean, how can it be an oversight? Everybody knows you need a licence to fish. Everybody knows the dates of them. It's not exactly a new thing, is it?
No. It's a criminal offence. I'm amazed.
Wow.
Jason's just tried me. We've got Jason Walker on the DNA Tip of the Week shortly, and I recorded him earlier on. He's going to be on in a bit, and he won't get the message. I keep buttoning him now to stop ringing me. Four times he's just tried ringing in 30 seconds.
Well, answer him, put him on loudspeaker and get a live DNA tip.
He could be. I'll just text him. Sorry about that. So yeah, I mean, the fact is like on a criminal matter, the EA bailiffs, right? They're sworn in for the day by the judge. I mean, that's how they're allowed to go on enforce the law. And that, you know, they're given police radios for the day. They're sworn in by a judge. That's what happens. So having being able to have discretion of the law is not their decision, I don't think. That's a decision of judges and magistrates and stuff. If you get nicked by a copper for a criminal offence, they nick you. And then the judge decides if it's serious enough, or the CPS decides if it's serious enough to prosecute and in the public interest and all that stuff. That's out of the copper's hands. I'm not sure that the EA bailiff on the day in question should have allowed them to continue fishing. I mean, none of this is an issue with the rule breaking the rules of the carp champs or whatever if the EA do the job.
No, but I do think the organisers have to stand up and take a bit of responsibility as well, because they should have seen, once it's been found that these people have no licences, the organisers of the match who were there, the marshals, whoever, they should have foreseen that if they'd have let these people fish, which they did, if they got through, which they did, people would be pissed off and kick up a fuss. And in today's climate of social media and everybody knows everything within seconds, there's no easy way out. They should have nipped it in the bud and just not let them fish and avoided all this backlash that they're getting. And, they deserve, to be honest.
Yeah, that's my opinion.
But really,
I think there's a series of cock-ups here from start to finish, that the EA allowed them to finish. They've then ignored their own rules based on the fact that the EA allowed them to carry on fishing. So they basically changed their own rules based on the EA's decision. And quite rightly, there's a few people kicking up a stink about it. So interesting to see what develops, whether they'll be disqualified later on because of the stink, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that is the only correct course. They should disqualify the qualifiers. They've broken a rule knowingly, and the next place people moved up to qualification.
Just
apologise and move on.
Just out of interest, it's very hard to determine how many rod licence holders there are in the country. I'm of the strong belief that at least half of the at least half the anglers in the country, course anglers that need a rod licence, at least half don't buy them for whatever reason. And I think the figure may be even higher. And I mean, if you take in a carp championships, eight pairs, that's 16 people, and out of that 16 there were 4 people without a rod licence. And these are not anglers that go once or twice a year. These are guys paying money to fish matches. So
that's 1 in 4.
That's 1 in 4. That's 25%. That's a huge statistic. All right, it's a very small sample size. It's a sample size of 16 people. But these are not, these are guys that clearly fish regularly. They're vented, they're paid whatever it is, 250 quid a person or whatever to fish a match. These are quite clearly serious anglers. I don't know who these anglers were. Let me just say now, I'm not having to pop at anyone. I have no idea who these people were. I haven't dug into it that far. I'm just going off what I've seen on the net, on Facebook. So these people could very well be friends of mine. I don't know. I have no idea who they are. So I'm not having to pop at anyone. I'm generalising here. Just, obviously, we've seen on the net the kickoff with the EA last week with these very stupid otter posts that they made. They used a picture of an otter to show how good they're doing with the rivers because the apex predator is hammering everything. We mentioned it on last week's show. It kicked off even more, thousands of replies. The EA made a very lame statement on a different post, and it has died down a bit, apart from the fact that somebody's started a page saying, let's boycott the rod licence. Problem with boycotting the rod licences is you're breaking the law. It's all very well standing up to make a point, but it's like the people that say, protesting against council tax and I'm not going to pay it. Well, you're just going to end up in court and maybe jail. Like, it's pretty pointless. It's a pointless protest because it's a criminal offence. You're just going to get nicked if you get caught. But the point is the any reduction in rod licence sales, and rod licence sales have been on the decline for the last few years. I don't think there's less people fishing. I think there's more people fishing. So if you take four individuals that are fishing the match circuit, doing heats and stuff, and you know, if some of them, whether it be oversight or whatever, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, it's just oversight, they didn't realise what date they needed it, and it's the start of the new rod licence year, so you know, it's just an oversight. How many other people that only go fishing 4 times a year, 5 times a year? What about the guy that does, he goes to France once a year and he maybe does 2 or 3 sessions, you know, he's a guy that works 6 days a week, he maybe does a couple of Saturday nights on his local lake and he has a week in France every year. Do you think that guy's buying a rod licence? And that's a very common demographic of angler. You know, people that go, they have a week's holiday once or twice a year, and they maybe get 3 or 4 short sessions, maybe even one nighters during the course of a year. Is that guy buying a rod licence? I would argue
Maybe not.
Yeah, but I reckon the percentage of rod licence payers against the percentage of people that don't buy them, it's a huge percentage. And like I say, we've just took a small demographic of 16 people there, and then pretty serious anglers, you would say, if they're paying money to fish matches, and a quarter of them didn't have rod licences. I mean, that,
if they're paying money to fish matches, presumably they've read the rules of said match. There's no excuse, to be honest. I don't think it is an oversight.
Well, I mean, you know, the reason why the EA go out checking rod licences in April is because it's the best time to catch people. Because, you know, I've been with friends fishing where we've arrived at the lake. In fact, it's happened in the last 12 months. It's probably happened to me 3 times. I've been with somebody, we've arrived at the lake, they've gone, shit, it was rod licences this week.
Did you know there was one fella on our Cromwell social who actually bought his licence on his phone online in the car park before he fished?
Exactly. This is my point, is, you know, sometimes the dates pass you by. Is it the 1st of April, the new rod licences?
It is, yes.
Yeah, quite often you'll get to your session and go, shit, I've not got a rod licence. And like you say, you can do it online, so it's easily sellable. But I've been fishing, that was one of the occasions on our social that I remember. That's a genuine oversight. As soon as they realise, they get straight online and sort it out. Now that happens a lot in April because it's quite often most people's first session of the year as well. You know, early April. So
yeah, why didn't the EA say to these people in this match, right, you can fish, but you buy your licences on your phones online right now. Otherwise,
they may well have done. That may be what's happened, but the point is, I mean,
that's true, we weren't there, so
that may have happened. They may have bought them there and then on the phone, and that's why they allowed them to carry on fishing. Because at the end of the day, this is where it gets a bit grey, right? So let's say I don't know the facts, I'm hypothetical here, but if you got caught fishing with no rod licence, the EA would go, right, stop fishing now, sod off. They also have the power to confiscate your gear, but let's say they don't do that, and they go, right, you're not allowed to fish, sod off. You could walk to the car park, get on your phone, buy a rod licence, and then go fishing again. The EA couldn't do a thing about it because you now own the rod licence. So perhaps that's what happened in this match, in which case I would change my opinion that maybe they should have been allowed to carry on fishing if they bought them there and then. Well, they're certainly allowed to fish legally. As to whether they've still broken the rules of the competition, yes, they have still broke the rules because they started that match with no rod licences. So it's maybe if they bought them there and then on the phone, maybe they did. That was why they're allowed to continue.
I don't know. It'd be interesting if someone was there. What's the messages? Let us know exactly what went down.
They made a post about it on their page to explain the reasons why, because the EA allowed them to carry on fishing, and then they deleted that post because there was a bit of a kickoff. So I don't know.
Yeah, what did he expect? But anyway, should we move on to something a bit more positive?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, have you seen on Facebook this morning, a friend of the Carpcast, Bev Clifford, ran 80 kilometres, I think it was yesterday.
It was 80 miles, wasn't it?
Let me get it up now. I think it was supposed to be 110, but unfortunately had to pull out after 80 kilometres. But, wow, I run 80 metres and I'm knackered and falling on the floor in a heap of uselessness.
Yeah, it's called...
Wow, well done, Bev.
It's called ultra running. I spoke to Bev about this. When Bev came on our Carpcast, she spoke about her ultra running. I mean, it's incredible. You know, they run for 24 hours, some of these. You know, they run 100 miles in 24 hours. It's unreal. It's like 3-4 marathons in one go.
Yeah, you're right, 80 miles.
Yeah, it's incredible. She finished short because she said the soles of her feet were just shot to pieces, and you know, she couldn't even walk another step. I happen to know an Irish ultra runner. He's like he's won world championships and stuff in ultra running, and he started doing it when he was like 40 years old. It seems to be like older people that seem to have a go. Bev's 21, as we know, so she started young, but. This chap I know, Dara O'Kearney is called, he still does it, and then he retired at like 46. He'd won a few world medals and stuff. He retired at 46. He's just started running again recently to try and get back to his peak of fitness that he was, and he's 50 something now, and he does 10 miles a day, and he does 30 miles on a Saturday. So he's basically just decided to get back in it casually, and he's running a marathon every single Saturday, and it opened my eyes to this ultra running. Then I saw Bev was doing it as well. I was like, what? It's an incredible feat of human achievement. You know, she'd been building up for months now. You know, we spoke about it when she was on the Carpcast, and it's just amazing. It's mind blowing. And one thing I do know is when these guys have finished these like 100 mile runs, they're generally in a wheelchair for a good few days. And I saw Bev was going to Australia for 10 days straight afterwards, so maybe it's her first super long run, but I know that the recovery time is, well, there's a couple of days of not walking, I think. So I wish you all the best on your holiday, Bev. It's a trip of a lifetime to Australia. Have a great time, and I hope your feet recover really quickly.
Yeah, I remember as a fella I used to work with, and I didn't know this till, you know, we actually worked at weekends together. You know, he was just an office bod, you know, wore his glasses, sat on his computer, and used to wear Star Trek T-shirts all the time. It's only when I was speaking to him, he dropped that he was into doing Ironman triathlons. And when he told, I can't remember the distances, but it was, you know, cycling, running and swimming. But that was like, you know, a full marathon, then, you know, swimming and cycling as well. And it's like, wow, it's, you know, the endurance that some people can actually achieve is, well, it's nothing short of impressive. You know, it puts me to shame.
I can't run to the shop and back. Can't. Yeah, I tried when I'm in a rush. Playing poker, you get a 5-minute break every hour online. So quite often if I need something from the shop, it's like, it's literally at the end of the road. It's probably 400 or 500 yards, and I've got 5 minutes to get there and back, so I'll run.
It's not happening, is it?
Mate, I'm done. By the time I get back.
Have I told you about the zombie jogger?
No.
Oh, as anyone who fishes Ikea will know what I mean. You know, every morning, it's, you know, in the early hours, you know, around 7-8 o'clock, there's this fella runs. He's an oldish fella, you know, he runs around the lake, but you can hear him coming from 100 yards away because he's breathing. He's like, and this is like running along. He's like, what the? I wonder what the hell it was the first time I heard it, but he's every morning, he's, you know, it's not a small lake, or there's plenty of other paths away from it. He's there, he's running, and he may sound like a zombie, but good on him. He's a damn sight fitter than I am.
Let's move on to our DNA tip of the week. And once again, we thank DNA Bates for supporting the Carpcast. You can support them and in turn support us by visiting dnabakes.com, and you can get a discount, 5% discount off everything. They're already cheap prices by using the offer code CARPCAST5 when you check out. So to try and make the advert a bit more informative, we have a DNA tip of the week, which is basically something we hope you can incorporate into your own fishing. And our DNA tip of the week this week comes from Jason Walker, who, while we're talking about running, he runs around the infamous Manchester Park Lake every day. You know, you get those apps when on your phone, they kind of track your progress. It's like you get them for cycling and for running and all sorts of stuff. He posts his up every day of his run. I've watched him go from, you know, like one orbit around the lake, which is like 1.3 kilometers or something. I think it's like 0.9 miles, something like that. I've watched him go from like one orbit to multiple orbits. In the space of a few months, he's lost a stone and a half. He's of similar age and build to me. So it makes me look at that and think he's inspiring me to maybe get fit. I think I need to get fit at my age, don't I? But yeah, Jay's a very accomplished angler. He uses DNA baits, caught a lot of fish. He's been fishing Dinton, White Swan and Black Swan for the last couple of years, and he's trying to catch Mr. Angry about the from the infamous Park Lake. And Jay, I spoke to Jay this morning while he was just packing up from said lake, and he said this.
DNA tip of the week.
Well, my DNA tip of the week for the spring is the SLK boilie. I've used it with great success in the spring on quite difficult lakes. I ended up with with 26 bites, a lot of the big mirrors from a lake in the northwest, a famous park lake, which I won't name because it's getting a load of mither. But my tip of the week is use the SLK with hemp oil and the yeast extract. What I found was in the spring that the salts in it, they were just, the carp were rooting it out, and it produced a lot of the bigger mirrors straight away. You know, either fishing an SLK 15mm corker matching a pop-up over the top, and or a milky malt white one. That's what I had most of my success on in the spring. Well, what I did was, in the spring, I was moving on to showing fish. And what I did was I'd put, say, find the fish wherever they were showing, put half a K over each rod, soaked in the yeast liquid and the hemp oil. And the fish was pretty much straight on it. I was very surprised. You know, I was very surprised how those big mirrors switched onto that.
Were you putting whole baits out or mashing
them
up?
Yeah, I was doing a mixture of 15 millis and 18 millis. And 12 millis when they'd roll them. But as a rule, 15s and 18. I wasn't really breaking them up because the bream would get onto it straight away. If, you know, if you broke the baits up or mixed pellets with it. But it was just a straight boilie approach. Mostly just fishing chods onto showing fish. But that SLK, there was something in it in the spring. You know, it was my first year using it, and I didn't really, you know, I didn't know what to expect. And not only did I catch, but I caught quite a few of the bigger mirrors, except for Angry. So hopefully I'll get that this spring.
And how long are you soaking the baits for?
Well, what I was doing, I was getting them out of the freezer when they're still frozen, putting the hemp oil on, no measurement because you can't overload it because it's natural products, getting the yeast liquid and getting the hemp oil and just mixing it. I'd say, 100ml of both, a mixture of both over, say, a kilo of bait if you was going to measure it out. But I wasn't measuring it because I was just coating them, giving them a good coat. And as they thawed out, they sucked it in, you know. And another thing I found out with that bait was, you know, it's got an incredible, like, shelf life because of all the salts in it and all the additives that I was putting with it. I've never had it go off, to be honest. You know, when it was in my bucket, but I kept it in good condition, you know, while, you know, kept air drying it a little bit. When they got a bit dry, when they sucked all that liquid in, I'd, you know, re-coat them again.
So thanks to Jay. If you want to get your hands on the SLK or some Secret 7, the Switch, the Ocean X or any of their baits, they do some great post-free deals, and you get a boilie of your choice and you get 3 key matching pellets or stick mix, tub of pop-ups or wafters and 250ml of bait soak. And you can get the 5 kilo deal for $59.99, the 10 kilo for $94.99, a 20 kilo deal with all that stuff for $149.99, and 50 kilos at £320. It's all delivered post free to your door, and if you use the code CARBCAST5 at the checkout, you can get an extra discount on all that. They do fantastic floral pop-up deals. We had Rob Hughes last week's show tell us all about the different colours that he's found. They're all the colours that they are for a specific reason, because of how fish see underwater. Check out last week's show to hear Rob with his DNA tip of the week explaining all that. And you can get the floral pop-up deal for £25 delivered to your door, 5 tubs of floral pop-ups, and again you can get a discount using the code CARBCAST5. They do Zig deals, which is big at this time of year. Kevin Nash on last week's show gave loads of great Zig information. In the Zig deal, you get 2.5 kilos of spod mix, a bottle of sticky sweet liquid, and a pack of Fox Zig aligners. It's £30. It's post free again, and again you can get a discount on anything on their website, including all the liquids, the hemp oil, and all the oils that Jason mentioned. That was the yeast he mentioned in that one. The liquids are extremely good value on the DNABaits.com website. Go on there, check them out. There's some fantastic gear. And every week we'll give you some more tips from our DNA Tip of the Week.
DNA Tip of the Week.
What are we doing now, Mark? I know you spoke to this week's guest.
I'm going to kick this cat out of the room because it's sat at my feet purring like a...
I can't hear the purring.
You can't?
No.
It's the loudest cat you've ever heard. It's like having a diesel engine at my feet. It's like fishing the A1 pits with a generator behind you for someone else to swim.
Yeah, mine's locked upstairs, so where it just crawls all over the desk and presses buttons.
Yeah.
But I know you spoke to another DNA guy, actually, Lee Mozza-Morris, this week, didn't you?
I did. It's quite an interesting interview. A few different subjects, like what it's like to go to Sparsholt College and lots of his filming work, and you know what he's got lined up in the future as well. So let's see what he's got to say. This week I'd like to welcome to the CARBCAST from Southampton, is it right, Lee Mozza-Morris?
Yeah, that's right, Southampton. Thank you for having me on, Mark. No, I'm a big fan of the show, buddy.
No, I'm glad you've took the time to the join us. And I was doing a bit of research, well, stalking you basically.
Right, and yeah.
what carping is around Southampton? It's not an area that springs out as a hotbed of carp fishing.
Well, to be honest with you, mate, I am quite lucky, really, where I live, because you've got Ringwood just up the road,
oh, yeah,
which obviously needs no introduction. You know, it's got some mega, mega waters, Ringwood has, with the likes of the Roach Pit and Rockford and New Forest Water Park. You've got Summerlee down there. And, yeah, there's plenty of water near me, to be honest with you. There's... on the Test Valley ticket, a lake that was probably made famous by Terry Earn, the Nutsy Lake. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Oh,
that little puddle of dreams.
Yeah, I can picture that big fish in my mind right now. I'm lucky I can remember what fish look like. You know, I even remember some of the like dark plated, fully scaled that were in there.
That's right, mate. Yeah. It was actually a water which I learned a lot of my fishing on, to be fair, because it's so clear over there, and it's quite a weedy water, and it's your typical moody small water there as well. You know,
yeah.
You know these small waters, they've small water syndrome, you know, where the fish are constantly on edge. They know from the minute that someone's fishing for them, you know. And yeah, I really learned a lot over there on that sea, to be honest with you. And I was lucky enough to catch them all as well, which was quite nice.
Oh, well, you learn from successes as well as failures. So, was it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I had a few of them over there as well. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Oh, we all have failures. Well, anyone who doesn't have failures is a liar. let's be honest. So, was it good for just like observation and close quarters? Because I watched not too long back, In Pursuit of the Largest video that Terry Earn and Nigel Sharp did.
Yes, and, mate. Yeah, know it very well. Yeah.
Yeah, you must. Well, fishing nutsy, you must have watched that yourself dozens of times.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it was actually that DVD that got me into my video work, to be honest with you. It was that DVD that sort of inspired me, really, to film absolutely everything that I did. It was, seeing Basil alive again, and...
Oh, yeah.
And them historic fish that are on there, and you're watching them in your living room, and they're breathing, and it's just like, I was amazed by it. And now... it's not so much the photos for me anymore. It's making sure that I get video footage of all these carp that I catch now, because you relive memories so much better now with video than what you do with a picture. That, my opinion, that is anyway. You know.
Yeah, I've got to agree, because the way technology has moved on now. And can I just ask, Lee, how old are you now?
31, mate.
Oh,
31. 32. 32, I think.
Yeah, we'll go for...
So old that I forget my age.
So old. You're a low 30, we'll stick at that.
Yeah, low 30, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I started, it was 35mm slide film in a camera. Digitals were only just starting to come out.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Before that, it was a big black thing. You put a cape over your head and wound it up.
I don't quite remember then, but the digital era, then I remember that very well, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, it took me a while to switch over from film to digital, to be honest.
There's something about film, the photos in film, I still feel to this day, are so much better than digital. Some of the film photos that I've seen are just incredible, There's something about film that I really, really love.
Yeah.
Over digital,
Yeah, I mean, digital's a lot more practical. If you take you can take dozens of shots, and
you
only need one or two good ones.
There was something about, with film as well, when obviously you had your little wind-up camera and everything, and then you took the photos, and then there was always that buzz of getting that film developed, and you were waiting for the photos and hoping and praying that they were going to be amazing, and 9 times out of 10, they were useless, but I miss them buzzes, to be honest with you, getting me film developed.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I used to use these prepaid slide films I'd buy from Jessop's.
Right.
You'd get like a 36 exposure, you'd catch a good fish, you'd take like, three or four of each side, five if it was a really good one, and then you'd not catch anything for weeks and weeks, and you just end up taking a load of random scenic shots just to use that film up to go and get it developed. I remember...
Yeah, then half the time you can't remember what you've taken, you don't know whether to actually get it paid to get it developed or not. I remember that as well.
But I remember one night, this was on back on Elstow, we had one of these nights, Jamie was fishing on Willington, it's like 5 miles up the road, little club lake, and it was storm after storm just coming over, and the thunder and lightning was, I've never seen anything like it in this country anyway. And I'd spoken to a friend of mine who was well into his photography, and I said, mate, how do you get pictures of lightning? It's just too good an opportunity to miss. I'm going to have a go. And all it is it's just keeping the exposure open and
that's
pointing
right,
it in the right direction and hoping the lightning strikes in the right
whilst
spot.
Whilst it's open,
And I used, I think it was just shy of 2 full 36 exposure films. I got one good shot.
Right.
And I'm so proud of it.
Yeah, it was worth it, definitely.
Yeah, it looks.
That's some, go on.
Yeah, it looks like someone in the reeds were on pit one's getting fried as well.
Oh, does it? Oh, awesome! But, no, I love them sort of shots. Them one epic shots that you get, especially out of film. Brilliant. But then nowadays, I can't even remember the last time that I actually got a photo developed. It's a shame, really.
Yeah, I can't even. I know I've still got my old Canon EOS 300 in the loft somewhere. It's not even worth selling them nowadays, but...
No, you're probably best off waiting a few more years, and you might get it as an antique.
Yeah, to be honest with you, that's That's photographed. That fish has been with me on so many special trips. I might just keep it.
Sentimental value.
Yeah. But what was
awesome?
You mentioned your videos, and as I was doing, Googled you and looking for notes and what have yous, and there was just video after video after video on YouTube. I thought, my God, I'm not watching all these. I'll be here all bloody night. So, go on then. What was the first one you did? How did you go about it? Because I've seen a lot of stuff on YouTube and blogs I watched. And
The first one I did, again, I watched Terry Earn's DVD and everything like that. And then from the minute that I see them fish alive in such raw sort of video footage, yeah, I just thought to myself, right, I've got to, just film everything now. And I take my boy fishing with me as well. So filming them memories, they'll live on forever then, and something that he can look back on as well when he grows up. So it was also, I wanted to do as much as I could for the companies that I was fishing for at the time as well. So it felt like, I was killing a lot of birds with one stone, really. I was making memories for myself to live on forever, for me and my little boy. And at the same time, keeping sponsorships happy, really. So that's how, my first video come about. And then I think the feedback that I get from my videos, I have a little bit of a different style from the norm, if that makes sense. My videos are a little bit quirky, I've had, I do like little mashup mixes at the end of them and stuff, but that only come about just to try and get away with copyright laws, to be honest with you. So what I did, I worked out that if you watch YouTube videos, there's always like a 30 second advert on them, and I always sort of wondered why there were only 30 seconds, and I'm sure they're 30 seconds because copyright doesn't kick in until 30 seconds after. I could be wrong, but that's what I worked out. So I made a mashup mix of 30 different of different new tunes as such that had copyright laws on them, but only made them 30 seconds. And I've gotten away with it for the last few years, and copyright hasn't caught up with me yet, which is nice. Which is the bane of my life, though, copyright, unfortunately, because there's so many songs out there that are perfect for them moments that you put videos together, but unfortunately you can't use them, which is a real shame, really. So the video side of things, I now pretty much only film my rainbow trips, to be honest with you. I do a lot of video sort of work-wise now. I'm lucky enough that I can actually get paid for the video that I do now at home. And, really, I just sort of film my rainbow trips because they are totally different from the knot. It's mega out at rainbow, totally different style of fishing. The way you fish it it's incredible to me. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, rainbow, but I love it. I absolutely love it. That's it, really,
I could tell you love that
sort of answers your question a little bit.
Yeah, I could tell you love rainbow. You start stuttering, your passion's coming over in your voice straight away.
Yeah. The places, it's everything about rainbow, even the smell of the place, I love it. It's just amazing. I can't speak any more about it, really, and I think that comes across on my videos that I've filmed out at rainbow, quite how passionate I am out there and the sort of fishing that is out there. I try to capture every single high and low that rainbow can give you, and there's plenty of them over there, plenty of them.
Yeah. What were your first impressions of rainbow when you first seen it? Because obviously I'm sure you've done your research and watched Steve Briggs stuff.
How it come about, it wasn't for me. I heard all the stories of people, it was all catch at that, everything was desperate to catch, you were fishing round a million miles away, round islands and this, that and the other. And when I spoke to Peter, I thought, that's not for me. I'm not an angler that catches, at all causes, if that makes sense. People that, put fish in danger, should I say, just for their own benefit of catching them. and I always ripped Rainbow off, and I always got offered trips back in the day when Paul Hunt used to do trips out there, and, yeah. And it just didn't appeal to me. And then I heard that it was really hard to get on. Once Paul Hunt's trips stopped over there, there was something about it where I was like, well, I sort of want to do Rainbow as a bit of a bucket list, you know, just to write it off and say that I've done it.
Yeah.
And I was sort of having a moan about it, thinking, oh, I can't. I tried to get on there and couldn't get on there. And then one of my friends had said, oh, well, you remember Paul Hudson, a guy that you used to fish with on a local park lake near to me? And he said, you know, he goes out 6 or 7 times a year. Give him a call. So I give him a call, and he was like, yeah, mate, yeah, yeah, come on a 2-week trip. And lucky enough, I managed to, bag a trip with Paul. And yeah, well, you know, most of it's on YouTube now, them trips, you know, and I'm lucky enough to know Paul and to keep on going, really.
My bucket list would include something like, you know, Cassine or something, you know. Maybe I'm being slightly older, different era, but...
Yeah, I would love to do Cassine, to be fair, or the Orient as well, but then I think all the time that I'd be out there, I'd always be wishing that I was on Rainbow, really, to be honest with you. It's just one of them lakes that I love it. I can't, and I'm back out there in 2 weeks' time as well, so I can't wait. Wow. And I'm on the island as well, so really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah, so is any of the fishing, like, you know, some of the horror stories was heard about, you know, tying lines around to go around islands and that?
The thing is with Rainbow is you have to adapt. When you go out there, you have to adapt to the ways that people fish Rainbow, really. And you almost have to see it to believe it. It's unreal. You know, people do fish round islands and people do fish up to snags. But there's a lot of people that fish it properly don't tend to lose a lot of fish on there. You know, lose the odd fish, but 9 times out of 10, you don't lose them in snags because you know, full well that if you go that close to a snag, at the end of the day, the fish is going to end up in there and you're going to lose him. So it's pointless fishing in areas like that. But you do fish around islands, into hooks, down channels and stuff. But you know, as an angler, when you're taking the piss as such, really, you know, you know, right, I'm fishing like this, totally ridiculous. You're always fishing ridiculous out there. I know I'm not probably making a lot of sense here, but Rainbow is very ridiculous in the way you have to fish Rainbow, but you can always go that step too far where you will constantly lose fish there. But if you fish it properly, yeah, into hooks and using big leads and stuff like that, as long as you're not fishing right up next to them snags, then 9 times out of 10, you'll land them, you know. And I've been unlucky a couple of times. I've had hook pulls and stuff, but I've never lost fish in snags. You know, it's never been down to bad angling, really, where by the time I've got out to the spot, the fish is like sort of like owned himself in a snag and you know, there's no way of getting him out. I have had fish sort of go into snags every now and then, but 9 times out of 10, they've come out, you know, all right for me. I have had one occasion where I sort of had to wrench one out, which I've captured on video, but you know, there was no harm that actually come to that fish whatsoever. It's a very touchy subject, Rainbow. I know a lot of people will be probably listening to this thinking, no, it's just not for me, it's not for me. But it's one of them, until you've done it and you've been out there and you've seen the way people fish out there, you just adapt to it, you know, and it's not as savage as it sounds, should I say.
Yeah, and I can imagine some of the stories have been exaggerated through Chinese whispers and, Facebook
there is some, you know, horror stories out there. And, you know, I've seen people fish it, you know, in bad ways as well. But then, you know, they've suffered from it because they've lost fish due to it, you know. And Pascal over there, he's very... sort of, you know, touchy about his fish and everything like that, and he won't have people fishing his lake that he thinks is fishing it wrongfully, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine that. In what's what is like an £80 common going to be worth you know, like that.
I wouldn't know, mate, what an 80 pound common is worth. I know what it's worth to me, and that's about I was lucky enough to see Simon Crowe have Eric's common when I was out there.
That's what I was thinking
in
of
peg six, and I captured some video of that as well, which is on one of my YouTube vids. And oh man, I've never seen something so incredible. You know, there's a lot of people that say, "Oh, that fish looks really tired," but it's just Eric's common, you know, was the one for me, really. And to see it on the bank, and to see a legend like Crowe holding it as well, it was just mega. It was such a moment, you know. I'll take that moment to the grave of me, really. It was just incredible seeing that fish on the bank, and sadly, that is the last time that fish has been seen on the bank as well. It seems like, you know, Eric's common isn't with us anymore, really. It was a fish that would normally come out once or twice a month. And since Crowe had it last May, I believe that was, it's not been seen since, unfortunately. So, you know, okay, I never caught it, but just seeing it on the bank was just as good as catching it, you know. It was incredible, really was incredible. At 86 pound as well, what a fish. That was unbelievable.
That is a unit. I mean, I remember the first time, you know, I seen the fat lady. It was a lad called Rod, you know. Fish was 53,
and yeah,
I was actually having a brew with a fella in the next room, having already chatted with Rod. I'd only got there for a session.
Right.
And then we heard the shout go up. Anyway, I've got my wellies on. It's like drizzling, you know, that warm, wet, carpy wind blowing. And
yeah,
I'm just holding the net, you know, just in deep enough water for the, you know, fish to be safe and comfortable while Rod's running around like a headless chicken and as you do, getting everything sorted out. And I'm looking down on this fish thinking, my God, I could put a saddle on that, you know. And you become in awe. It's the same, like, you know, first time I've seen something of a 30 and then seen a 40. And honestly, I cannot imagine what an 80 pound carp looks like. I hope to find out one day.
Yeah, mate, it is just absolutely mega. I think I was more buzzing than what Crowe was. He was sort of like, I can't believe, you know, you're all right, but you know, my breathing was going, man, my heart felt like it was ripping out my chest. I just, to see an animal like that on the bank was words can't describe it, mate, you know. And again, having that video footage of that fish, that memory will live on forever, not only for me, but for Crowe as well. And it just, you know, words can't describe some things, whereas video, you know, it gives you that bit more of an insight, you know.
Oh, definitely. We've had a similar sort of thing when we're doing this podcast, because people, you know, we compare us to like reading an article in a magazine by someone, and then, you know, hearing them talk is totally different. You know, you get a totally different picture
for sure,
of people.
Mate. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
I've got to say, it's nice to hear someone talk so passionately about someone else's capture.
Yeah. I've got plenty of them, mate. I've seen plenty of other people catch, that's for sure.
Not just me, then.
I'm always just, you know, I'm not one of these bit of people that get jealous of other people's captures and stuff. I see a lot of that, unfortunately. I love seeing fish on the bank, and I love seeing other people catch fish. And, you know, what I don't like seeing is people out there just for numbers all the time, you know. There was a few people that I knew on a syndicate a couple of years ago, and he wouldn't fish the winter. And I'm like, right, well, why won't you fish winter? And he's like, oh, because I've had 56 fish out of here, and I've done 56 nights on here, and I don't want to fish the winter because my nights won't match up to the fish that I've had out of here. So I'll wait until next spring. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, if I do the winter, then I'll end up blanking, and I'll have done more nights than fish. And I'm like, wow. You know, I don't understand all that. And I've met a few people like that, strangely enough, that are always fishing for numbers. And I'm just like, mate, just fish for yourself, dude. You know, go out there, catch fish, and be happy for other people that catch fish as well. You know, that I just sometimes I don't get it. You know, I just I just love seeing fish on the bait. I love seeing other people catch fish. And yeah, it's that's what it is for me. You know, I'm just as buzzing when I see someone catching as I am for myself, you know?
Yeah, excuse me. I'm exactly the same. I love it. And, you know, the celebrations and, you know, some of the best moments, the moments shared.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. You know, just... I'm almost a bit gutted that I went around in them Yateley times when you read sort of Rob's books, you know, when they all used to go up to the pubs and stuff like that, and that must have been such a great time, like on Raysbury and stuff, when they all used to meet in the pub after a big catcher and everything. That must have just been such an epic time.
Oh yeah, I mean, you must have watched the Yateley Yahoo video as well then.
Yeah.
I was going to say, we had a touch of that when it was fish, Elstow too, and you know, there was only a very small number of regular midweekers, and every Tuesday night without fail was a barbecue.
Brilliant.
You know, then we'd,
awesome.
You know, each week we'd have to help a lad called Paul back to his swim and make sure he was tucked up in his bivvy with his door down so we didn't get out and fall in the lake. And
no, right, yeah, some of the states I've seen people in as well. Hilarious.
Yeah.
But no, good times, you know, and that's what I love, you know, about carp fishing as well. Just like, you know, the good times that you have, the people that you meet along the way. It's just everything about carp. It's even the drive there, you know. I love it. I absolutely love it. I never stop thinking about it.
Yeah. I've also said I'm the same about 10 times now already. But, you know, when you mentioned, you know, the drive there, I'm always, like, flying down the A1 usually, and your cogs start ticking in your brain, and, you know, which swims will be taken.
Yeah, you just never stop as an angler, though, do you? You know, you're just always passionate about it, you know. Earlier on today, I'm walking around West Quay with my girlfriend and whatnot. She's looking in New Look, and I'm looking at, you know, like Robert and Dyer's for little bits that can help me out my angling all the time. You know, I'm never, ever stopping... thinking about it, about the, you know, bless her, because she gets punished with me talking and thinking about fishing constantly, you know, and I think that most anglers are like that as well and can relate to that, you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it, but I'm sure my wife's the same. Yeah, use a different terminology, but yeah, we've been the other side of the world. We've been America, walking down bloody Disney parks, and then I find a pool and I'm. You know, we're like a pond, and I'm like, I'm looking at it for fish.
Yeah. We're all the same, you know. You know, wherever you're driving or anything, the minute you get a glimpse of water, that's it. You know, you feel you just, you know, as anglers, we're all like that. I think all of us are.
I know you've got Rainbow in a couple of weeks. What are your, future plans? Have you got any targets this year? Or
yes, mate. Yeah. Well, I've always really sort of been a bit of a syndicate man. Really, I've never been one to go out and fish the day ticket waters and stuff. I've always been, you know, on syndicates mainly, and I love the syndicate life. Really, I've only really got into the day ticket side of things this year due to DNA doing the winter series, it was amazing, to be fair. I caught some mega fish this winter. Not that you can call it a winter. I would say it was more of an extended autumn this year.
I'm fishing
was unbelievable. So, yeah, it was nice to do a bit of day ticket waters, but at the same time, day tickets aren't for me, you know. I really do love fishing one lake, getting my head into one lake, and I don't really target fish. I just, as long as there's some nice ones in there, it's not really a weight thing for me. I don't set my stage right. I've got to go and catch, you know, the biggest fish in the lake. As long as they're pretty... That's all that matters to me, to be honest with you. And I've now just joined Frimley Pit 4.
Ooh.
And, nice. It feels like it's a bit of me, Pit 4, definitely. I've done my first session this week on there, got lucky, which was nice as well, which was unexpected, to be fair. But yeah, I was lucky enough to have a 34-pound common out of there on my first night, stroke morning. And then got breamed out, well and truly breamed out on the second night. I ended up having 11 of them in one night. It's just
oh, no.
Like,
I don't think I'd have cast out again.
Of fishing, but them bloody things are just... It was from 2 o'clock in the morning till 4 in the morning as well. Couldn't have been a worse a time at night. And they just wouldn't leave me alone. Big, big bream as well. Absolute slabs. Every single one of them was massive. And yeah, done me right in. You know, I was down to my last two leads as well and just cursing like you wouldn't believe, you know. But luckily enough, I didn't have another bream after that. But then I didn't have any more carp either. So, but yeah, to open my account with a 34 pounder and it was, you know, proper commonness, you know, an angry looking thing, you know, if that makes sense. Called a common an angry looking common. It just, they do look angry in there. There's some real nice ones in there.
Yeah, is that where?
And yeah, I'm looking forward to for the rest of the year on there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, is that where Charlie's mate lives, or is that another Frigley?
No, that's across the road. That's in Pit 3, Charlie's mate. That's, yeah, Pit 3 is, well, another mega, mega water, really. Lots of nice fish in there. And yeah, hopefully within time, I might get the opportunity to fish Pit 3, which would be really nice. But in the meantime, I'm well and truly Pit 4 bound at the moment, you know. I don't stop thinking about it already, so yeah, looking forward to this year on there, to be fair.
Yeah, so I'm just going back to you know, bream, because I had my own little bream experience this week. It was
right.
Only one, but you know, one was enough. Say the lake I'm fishing, the big pit I'm just playing on at the minute. I've got a syndicate starting later on in, well, 1st of June. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah,
but the bream record there's like just shy of 17 pound, and you know, this thing I had, it was, and it took off like a bloody carp.
Did it?
Yeah, yeah. Came in like a wet sack. It went back to its what it should be doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was, you know, I didn't wait. I just unhooked it in the edge and let it slip back, because there's plenty of bream anglers. I'll let those people enjoy them. And
I mean, if I was fishing for her, I might have been loving life. Literally, like, every single one was massive. Absolutely huge, they were. I mean, the thing is, I've scaled all my kit down, because there's a few long walks on Frimley, so I've, like, completely cut my kit down now, and I forgot my scales. Luckily, there was a lad that was next door that I could borrow my scales from for the carp that I had. But these bream, they were that big, I would have weighed them. There's no doubt about it. They were absolutely massive. And they were proper old as well. Like, they weren't even slimy anymore. They were that old.
Yeah? Wow.
Yeah, yeah, they're proper gnarly-looking things. I don't know if I'd go as far as having a photo with one, but I definitely would have weighed one.
You don't go as far as filming them, then?
No go with the filming side, definitely not. Not at that time in the morning, anyway.
No, I mean, when you get your carp, how do you film at night? Have you got lights you use?
I've got like a massive, massive sort of floodlight thing that sits up on top of the camera, and yeah, I film with that at night time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I don't really catch a lot of fish at night, to be honest with you. It's very rare that I do, or if I do, 9 times out of 10, it's always that early morning time, really. And I think it's because of the lakes that I fish a lot of the times. So you get that bite time in the morning, and then that's about it, you know. So I've been quite lucky, really, with the nighttime sides of things. And I've been lucky on Rainbow as well. I've not had any bites out of there at night either, which I would hate to have a bite at night on Rainbow, because it's scary, mate. There's no other way to put it. I wouldn't like to go out there in a boat at night, definitely not. And if it does happen, I'll be dragging Paul out of his bed to come out there with me, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, I tell you what, you just mentioned in boats on Rainbow, and I can't remember his name now, but there's a fella who I know. He's on my Facebook, I'm going to check it afterwards, this. And I used to fish at Rainbow. This is like when it had, you know, no one had heard of it years back.
Right.
And he was out there in a dinghy, middle of summer, and over, I don't know, 20 foot of water, I remember him telling me. This is a long time back he told me this story, but
yeah,
he'd made the mistake of going out in one of these cheap, you know, 10 quid beach dinghies.
Right.
Hot weather, mate. And the seam just split. It closed up round him like a clam. And he says he couldn't do anything until he felt his arse hit the bottom of the lake. And he says, mate, if he didn't have his life jacket on, you know, pulled his cord, it you know, dragged him up to the surface.
Yeah, yeah.
If we out of that, he'd be a goner. His wife's watching from the bank as well.
Really? Oh, mate, you can't go out there in a dinghy, I'm telling you now. Them hard-bottom boats that Pascal provide you with out there, half the time I'm surprised they even last, to be honest with you, dude. You have stumps and things that appear out of nowhere in there, and just you'll be trotting along, and all of a sudden, just carnage. You know, you hit a stump, you're up the other end of the boat, your ass is on your head, you don't know what's going on. Honestly, mate, it is scary in the day, let alone at night. You know, and dinghy wise, no go, definitely not. I would not advise that. That's for sure.
Yeah, I've done. I've got a dinghy. Yeah, one of the old Sevilo fish hunters myself, and it's an art controlling the damn things. The slightest breeze, and then that's it. You're gone.
Yeah. No, they're not ideal, the dinghies, for sure. Definitely. I'm glad that Pascal provides you with a decent hard bottom boat when you're out there, and they are good boats, to be fair.
Yeah,
they are. And they need to be. Yeah, it's, I know it's all nice, you know, boat fishing and everything like that, but you just can't risk it, you know. You hear of all these horror stories and it's just not worth it, you know. You've got to be wearing a life jacket and you've got to keep yourself safe when you're fishing all the time, really.
Yeah, I've seen one or two YouTube videos or pictures of, you know, some high-profile anglers as well, and they're just out, they're stood up in the boat in the middle of the nowhere, no life jacket, and I just cringe. You know, it's not the example to set.
To be honest with you, I have done that as well. You know, I'd hold my hands up. I have just got in the boat and shot out there, you know, but there's always two of us there, you know, and not that that's any excuse, but if anything was to happen, then you have always got someone else there watching you constantly, you know. But yeah, I would never, ever advise ever getting into a boat without a life jacket on. You know, it's just a written rule, you know.
Let's wind the clock back a little bit. So I got down, you went down to Sparshall College, is that right?
Yes, mate, yeah. Do you know what, that was the best time of my life, that was, at Sparshall. I really, really enjoyed myself there, you know.
Yeah.
It's like Winchester's only up the road from me, and I boarded there. I actually stayed on campus, even though it is only up the road. But I'm really glad that I did, because the friends that I made from Sparshall College, it was epic, you know. I loved going to Sparshall. I got very close to Raisbury when I was there. Simon Scott was my tutor whilst I was there, and he, you know, the stories that Simon tells, and you know, he's quite a secretive bloke, Si, and you know, some of the stories he told us about how he caught Mary and stuff, and we're sat in the swim at Raisbury when he's telling us about these things, and and the things that you can learn from Simon Scott are just, you know, the man is just a carp in himself, you know, that there's no other ways to describe it, really. And to have someone like that teaching me was just amazing. And the friends I met there, that's where I met Mark Bartlett.
Yeah,
as well, you know, back in 2001, I think it was at college, and we've been good friends ever since. And you know, yeah, what an amazing time. I recommend Sparshall to anyone, although sadly I don't think Simon Scott's there anymore, but I'm sure, you know, that the buzz hasn't changed much from there. I had some really, really good times at Sparshall, really enjoyed it. Once I finished Sparshall, I soon realised that unless you knew people within the fishing industry as such, and you had a job set up, it was very hard to get a job doing something unless you sort of wanted to go trout grading for Tesco's or something like that. You know, there was a few of them kicking about, which wasn't for me. But luckily enough, Mark Bartlett was building his fishery once he had finished the course.
Yeah.
So he asked me to go and live with him for a couple of years, and we pretty much dug the lake from scratch, which was, again, you know, an awesome time of my life, living up in Bristol with Bartlett. His family are just such nice people, honestly. They're one of a kind, real great people. And, yeah, I had an amazing time building the fishery for a couple of years then. And then I got into window fitting for years after that, unfortunately. But But yeah, I've stopped the window game now, and now I do a lot of video work. I'm luckily, you know, video. When I was doing my YouTube blogs, it was, as I've spoken about, obviously at the beginning, it's a bit of a hobby, you know, more than anything. And now I've managed to turn that hobby into something that's paying me now as well, which is really nice. So now I've not long got back from filming the Shimano guys over in France. So I'm currently editing that together at the moment. Hopefully they won't mind me saying that on the podcast. I'm sure they'll be all right with it. But yeah. So now I'm video mad at the moment and love it. Really, really enjoy doing it. I love filming fish. You know, I love anything involved with fishing. Who doesn't? You know, and for it to pay the bills now is epic. I love it. I really, really do enjoy it.
That's got to be anybody's goal in life, to actually start, you know, making a few, even a bit of pocket money on the side then, or to actually make a living out of your passion. It's not light work then, is it?
No, for sure. Definitely not. No, it's not. And luckily enough, I've had the phone call from Rob Hughes to help him out with a few things that we've got coming up in the future as well. I won't say too much. Rob likes to keep things very secret. So he's like, you know, luckily enough, I know Rob and it looks like the future's bright with the things that he's doing as well. It's such a privilege, really, to know Rob, to be fair.
Oh, he's a lovely fella. Although, I am suspicious. I'm thinking Rob's had himself cloned about 3 or 4 times, because can any one man be as busy as that as he is?
I don't know how. Literally, I was thinking the same, funny enough, the other day. How he does the amount of stuff that he does is just unbelievable, you know, and find the odd time to go fishing as well. The guy is just... Yeah, what a great person to have as a mentor, really. That's how I see Rob, really. The guy is I don't think I could ever be as busy and do as much as what Rob could do in a day, let alone, you know, it would take me weeks, without a doubt. Yeah,
and he doesn't just...
You know, he's, incredible.
Yeah, he doesn't just play at things either. You know, he makes some TV programmes, let's go on BT Sport, let's go match fishing, let's win the world champs.
He's a guy that does things, gets things done, you know, and I love that about Rob, really. You know, it's not just all talk all the time. You know, he comes up with an idea, he makes that idea happen, you know, and I take my hat off to Rob, I really do, and I'm really looking forward to working alongside Rob in the next, you know, coming months, really.
You have to keep up.
I will have to keep up, definitely. Although I was out with him not so long ago, and he sort of said to me, God, I'm struggling to keep up with you, Andy. Yeah. And I'm thinking, yeah, all right, you know. looking at him, he's just, you know, what a great guy, you know, honestly, with the stuff that he's doing in the fishing industry. I take my hat off to him, but I really do.
Yeah, and Jamie and myself owe him a lot of thanks for, you know, we supported the podcast for, well, we had him as a guest on episode 3, and
yeah, mate. Yeah. I remember listening to it.
A couple of times since.
Another guy, Rob, you know, when he talks, you listen, you know.
Yeah. Oh, he's another supporter of the Carpcast, though. You've had a bit to do with. He looks like you had fun with Ian McMillan filming his tuition DVD. I've seen all those outtakes.
Yeah.
There's got to be more than that as well, knowing Ian.
Yeah. I mean, that how that came about as well was Ian had actually watched one of my rainbow videos.
Yeah.
And he sort of said, you know, he never ever watches videos. He never sits down and watches things. And he watched my Peg 6 rainbow video. And one day I was sat at the lake and gets a phone call from someone. I've answered the phone. It's like, Lee, it's Ian McMillan. I'm like, wow, this is a bit random. Yeah, hello, mate. You all right? He's like, mate, I had to track you down, find your phone number and just say that rainbow video was incredible. I was like, oh, right. And then he's like, we have to do something. And then we come up with that idea with the trip. We were just like, you know, what's not out there video-wise that would be good for the fishing industry, really. And we thought, well, you know, a carp fishing video that will, you know, teach people, you know, everything about it, really, you know, being down to etiquette, you know, the the Warcraft side of things, tying simple rigs and not promoting any companies or a said fourth angler, you know, and there's not really any of that out there. So that's what really the tuition's all about. It is a tuition, you know, in DVD format. And yeah, I'm quite proud of it, very proud of it. And I think Ian is as well. I think I've done him proud anyway.
Yeah, it's good. I've watched it. And yeah, obviously Ian's got his own sponsors with Shimano Dynamite. And yeah, there was no, yeah, obviously he's using the gear, but that's what he's got. But he's, there was no gratuitous plug-in, was there? So it was
no, and that's what we really didn't want on it, was, you know, no plug-in of anything really. We wanted to, you know, for people to spend £6 on something, which I don't think's a lot of money. You could, you know, it's the price of what, a packet of hooks nowadays, and yeah, it's the stuff that you'll learn from that DVD, I think, is priceless, really, in my eyes. So And yeah, I am very proud of it, definitely. And you know, Ian to film is just, you know, is such an easy bloke to listen to, really.
Yeah. Any plans for the tuition too?
I don't know, Matt. I don't. We don't know. We were always a bit worried that someone else might sort of copy it. You know, perhaps one of the guys, you know, one of the big companies maybe might jump on it and do their own tuition type style DVD. So we're just going to play it by ear, to be honest with you, and see what happens. What I don't want to do is you know you watch a film and the first one is great, and then you get a number two to it and it's never as great, and then you do. I think if we could make sure that it was better, a lot better than the first one, then perhaps we would do it. But I don't know if we would make it a lot better. I don't know really, to be honest with you. I think we're going to play it by ear, and then if we come up with quite a quirky idea for a number two, then it'll be done. But until we both think, right, we could definitely make something better than that, then perhaps we would do a number two, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure over time, you know, yourself and Neil, I'm sure you'll come up with something. But I know you've mentioned you know, Rob Hughes with you know, some plans that you can't tell us about, but
yeah.
What else have you got in the future? What other YouTube delights are you going to serve us with?
Well, hopefully I'll have this... I'm going out to the island out at Rainbow in a couple of weeks' time, so I'll get that filmed, and hopefully that'll be another good video. The thing is, I like to always make sure that the next YouTube video that I do is a lot better than the last, and the last one that I done in Peg 6 was quite a video, to be fair. The footage that I captured on that video was out of this world, unbelievable. Some of the boat battles that I had were just mental, unbelievable. And hopefully I get enough footage on this next one to make another epic video as such, if you want to call it that, really. As long as I know in my head that I've got enough footage to make it better than the last one, then I'll do another video.
Yeah, is that the one you mentioned? Is that the one where there's like some epic Hollywood type intro into it? Because I remember,
I've sort of got like Will Smith narrating it at the beginning, and yeah, I don't know. With Rainbow, I always want it to really sort of capture you, and I think having as ridiculous as that sounds, having Will Smith narrating a bloody fishing video, it worked for some reason. And a lot of people comment on that, the fact that Will Smith narrating a fishing video works at the beginning, you know. And I think that's with every video, the first couple of minutes or so, if you don't capture the audience, then they won't end up watching it all. So I always try and make sure that the first few minutes of a video are good, and for some reason Will Smith, it worked, you know, or I think it did anyway, and the feedback that I've had sounds like it worked.
Yeah, well, look, I can't remember the figure, but you've certainly got plenty of views on it. But I remember watching it myself, and it was a bit of a what am I actually watching sort of moment. Will Smith, yeah, fishing.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know, but yeah, like I say, it's such an epic venue. I think it just deserves that that epicness to it, really. That's it, just felt right to have that on there, so that's why he's there.
Yeah, oh, great stuff. Right, there's a lot of people, you know, myself included, you know, we're like playing around. I've done a couple of little YouTube videos, which I'm not even going to tell people where to find them because they're crap. But no, on the Carpcast YouTube channel. But
right,
what tips would you give people who want to go out and make videos, film the fishing?
I think a lot of the time it's all about the edit, really.
Yeah.
It's you just want to film. I try and film everything, and then 9 times out of 10 I'll have, you know, hundreds of gigs worth of video, but I'll probably only use about 10 gigs worth of it. I'll just take, it's taking out the best bits, really. I think you need to spend most of your time on the edit. That's what I feel. I think you should go out, film everything that you do, but just be mindful about what people want to hear about and that, and try and do something a bit quirky so that it's watchable, because there's a lot of videos out there and people are sat in their brollies droning on about what lines they're using and what rigs they're using and stuff like that, and it all gets very, you know, samey with videos. I think if you can do something that's a little bit different from the norm that people are going to want to watch, then that's the best tip that I can give you, really, is spend more time on the edit. You know, make sure that you edit to the best of your ability, really. That's how I always work.
Yeah, that sounds good advice there. I suppose sometimes you've got to be quite brutal just to chop the crap out.
Yeah, you have. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, sort of people are always commenting on my video, sort of saying, oh, I want to know a bit more about the technical side of it, you know, like, you know, exactly what's this you're using, why are you using that, and it can get very boring if I end up putting all of them bits in, so I just try and drop them in as subtly as possible, really, and almost, you know, what another thing I don't like seeing is just people absolutely whoring bait and whoring about, you know, this certain item of tackle that they've been given for free and stuff like that. You know, people just don't want to see it, really, or hear about it, you know. It's well that's my opinion anyway. Some people might say no, I like, you know, people whoring themselves out, but you know, it's not something that I like watching anyway. You just need to be a bit more mindful, really, you know, especially with video, because you're putting yourself out there to be shot down as well.
Oh,
video,
some YouTube,
you know,
comments can be brutal, can't they, at times?
Oh mate, yeah, definitely, yeah. I don't know what it is about YouTube, it just seems like people, you know, a thrive off of just absolutely battering. You know, I've seen some Terry Earn videos and some of the comments on there are just out of this world. You know, I'm just like, wow, what gives you the right? You know, I don't quite get it, you know, and YouTube's really, really bad for it as well. But luckily enough for me, touch wood, I don't get it that much, to be honest with you. I don't really get completely battered by, you know, people just constantly slating me down, luckily enough, really.
Yeah, you do have to develop it. Well, when you're in videos, magazines, or, you know, podcasts, anything, you've got to develop a bit of a thick skin, because there's always idiots out there.
Oh yeah, you are always going to get that, and to be honest with you, I just laugh it off, you know. I just laugh it off, you know, because you have to at the end of the day, because if you let it get to you, then it just end up ruining your fishing for you. And at the end of the day, it's a hobby, you know. People go fishing because they enjoy going fishing, and that's what it is. And some people, they take it so seriously. I just don't get it, you know. I don't understand why.
Yeah, I know. I think we've all encountered them, but let's be honest, I've encountered a hell of a lot more brilliant people who are as passionate as you and myself, and
by far 100%, to be honest with you. It's very rare that you get them guys. That you see a lot of it in social media, but I've never encountered much of it, you know, face to face, to be honest with you. There's so many, you know, great guys out there, there is, for sure.
Yeah, brilliant. And do you know, we've been going just short of an hour already.
Oh, right, have we really?
Yeah, that's flown by.
Yeah, that's the problem when you're talking fishing, you know. I always moan to me missus when she's talking to her mates on the phone. I'm like, how have you been on that phone for ages? She thought, well, you were talking to Dean yesterday for nearly 2 hours. So I was like, oh, right, fair enough.
Yeah, but we're talking about something meaningful, fishing, not shoes and shopping.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But, I think that's... One last question. What software do you actually use for your editing?
I use Final Cut Pro for the video editing. I film off my SLR just because it's handy to have an SLR, a decent camera that takes pictures and does good video as well. I use a Canon 70D because it's got an auto focusing on there as well, which is really handy. With a lot of SLRs, it's a lot of manual focusing, whereas with the Canon, you put your face in front of it and it'll follow you about, you know, and keep you in focus. So that's a little tip for people if they're looking for a camera, an SLR that takes good photos. 70D, I can highly recommend it for sure. And Final Cut Pro, which is, I believe, like a Mac editing suite.
It is. It's an Apple one that's £130, because I was trying to blag them when I bought my Mac to put it on for me and they wouldn't.
Yeah, you can't, although I probably shouldn't be saying this, but you can uTorrent it. You can get it for free.
All right, then. That would be wholly not recommended, and I shall not be doing it at the end of this chat.
Yeah, we'll speak later. I'll let you know.
And
that's what I use.
Yeah. And before we go, where can people find your rainbow videos and your other stuff?
Just type in Lee Morris video diary and they all come up, all my videos. And my latest one is Peg 6 at Rainbow, and then there's another one on there, Peg 16. I'd advise watching the 16 before the Peg 6, and you can see the difference, obviously, in the editing. One's, you know, get slightly better than the other, you know. So, yeah, Peg 16's the first rainbow one, then Peg 6 after that. And then a lot of the other videos before that is just me and my little boy out on the bank, you know, just loving fishing, really.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And the other ones, is it DNA Digital for the Winter Series day tickets?
Yes, mate. Yeah. DNA have got their own YouTube channel. Yeah, if you type in the Winter Series... They did a brilliant one the year previous to me, my one as well, to be honest with you, which is definitely worth a look. Real good footage on there. You know, winter time, it was a proper winter when he fished as well, and he managed to catch him in the snow. That's worth a look for sure. And then obviously my one that I've done this year, I was lucky enough to catch on all of them, which was nice. And yeah, there's a few mental sessions on there, and my little boy makes an appearance on one of them as well. He's a little bit of a superstar, my little boy is.
The next generation of Carper.
Yeah, hopefully, mate. I'm never going to push it on him, but he definitely loves going, that's for sure. You know, I sort of let him fish the way that I was brought up, you know, just going out there catching roach and stuff. Like, everyone's like, give him some carp rods, give him some carp. And I don't want him to start carp fishing because I think he'd lose the buzz for it. So just want to let him go about it his way. He loves going, and as at the moment, that's enough for me, really.
Yeah, I think you've got it absolutely bag on then. And I've said we've run his time, and I just want to thank you for taking time out. This has been a great chat, and thanks.
No, thank you, Mark, and love the show, mate, and really appreciate you guys asking me to come on, and keep up all the good work, mate. I really, really enjoy the podcast.
So big thanks to Lee. You will be hearing Lee on future shows with his DNA tips of the week. But for now, we've got some listeners' questions, haven't we, Mark?
Yeah, we've got a couple, and we'll start with this one, which came via the contact form on our website. Tony Cowgirl. Do you think that's his real name?
Possibly not.
Yeah. He says, I fish a local lake where carp go up to 20 pounds. Would you recommend I stick with the method feeder and pellet approach, which has brought me a few carp and many bream, or keep experimenting with larger baits and zigs, etc., which so far has had a really sparse results, although I appreciate it's still not fully warmed up. Secondly, where can I get more of the intro music, please? Do you want to start off? You're the music man, because you won't let me, for fear of death metal.
Ask us a question.
So the music is actually made by On the Extra. It's the extra one that everyone seems to love, but they're both, the extra and the normal one, are both made by the same guy, who is Alan Blair's brother, Matty Blair. If you want to find him on Facebook, Matty is spelled M-A-T-T-I, Blair, as in Alan Blair, and he's produced both of those songs. He's a fantastic drum and bass producer, amongst other stuff. He's very, very talented guy. It's not really for me to give those tunes out, so I would suggest you contact him. But yeah, they're both fantastic. As far as the question goes, you want to start, Mark?
Yeah, I was lucky. He's cut a few cart with his method approach. I'd stick with that or just vary it slightly. If it's obviously working, I'd maybe use big, larger baits. I've also found using pop-ups of around 2 to 3 inch doesn't stop the bream, but it slows them down a hell of a lot. And we'll see what happens. You know, you're on the right track, definitely. And you're right in saying that your lakes haven't warmed up. You know, they're getting there slowly, as we've already discussed. And what have we got? Yeah, Zigs also. Yeah, listen to last week's show with Kevin Nash if you want some Zig information. And again, just keep your eyes out. Just read the water, your watercraft. If the fish are up in the water, go for Zigs. You know, if you see some bubblers and, you know, just keep an eye on the margins. You know, you don't tell as much about your lake, so you can't really get too specific. But carp generally like to give themselves away, you know, location, and, you know, for the right method in the right place, you know, in your case, the method is a brilliant, it's a method I've used before, and coincidentally, I've just been, we've just got the new bait up method feeders quarter released in the shop this morning. I've been putting on the shelf and a couple behind the counter for me.
Do you not find you catch the smaller ones on the method? Do you not think you might, get in there with some boilies? You might start picking up a few of the better ones. I mean, carp love boilies everywhere. If you're catching on the method feeder and pellet, you're definitely going to catch on boilies. I would certainly give it a go. I'd go and buy yourself a bag of boilies. For any reputable company, obviously I use Nash Bait, which is fantastic, or at dnabaits.com, any of their baits. Switch or the SL Secret 7, sorry, SLK. Just try it. Yeah, a bag of like small to medium sized boilies, something, anything from like 10 to 15 mil. Matching to other pop ups, fish a little pop up rig and catapult 30-40 baits around it and see what happens. You might start to pick up a few of the better fish. Carp certainly love boilies, so.
Yeah, and the good thing about the carp fishing, you know, we're using two or three rods, you know, we don't have to do the same on all of them. You know, experiment. One rod can carry on in your method, and you can compare the results on your other rod to fishing, maybe a small pop-up, as Jamie's just said, over a couple of pouches of just boilies. You know, seeing what you catch, you know, carp in relation to bream.
Yeah, certainly.
Mix it up.
Is there another's? Well, yeah, it's a listener's question, I would say, that I saw on the net it was this week. It's one of our American listeners. I seem to have quite a lot of American carp fishing friends on my podcast, and a few of them have mentioned to me that the carp cast is going pretty big in the States now. They seem very interested in how we do things in the UK. I've had a fair few friend requests from foreign anglers from Europe and languages that I don't speak. You see funny writing and stuff, a lot of Eastern Europe stuff. I've been getting a lot of friend requests. So Carpcast, it's always been global from the first show, but it does seem that it's catching on more abroad. And it seems to me that, like, kind of the way everybody fishes for carp these days, you know, like the three rods, the buzzers, the bobbins, the kind of method that we use, seems to be that, I mean, that's obviously the most fun way to fish for carp, I think. And it seems to have caught on everywhere else. It seems to have come from England. And it seems that a lot of these countries, they're interested just in how we do things. Being that, you know, the UK is kind of the home of carp fishing, as it were. And one of the things that I saw, the American chaps, they posted a picture of a barbecue with a few of the ingredients for a traditional English breakfast, and they were actively asking, how do we do an authentic English breakfast?
Ask us a question.
Even when I was a kid and I started carp fishing, the bacon butties in the morning were like, the highlights of a carp fishing session, you know, the bacon butties in the morning. It was even in the early 80s. Like, I mean, I would never cook bacon at home. I mean, I was a kid in those days as well. I never did any cooking at all, apart from when I was fishing. But it's even if you only went with 3 pot noodles and a pack of bacon, like, you always had a pack of bacon with you, didn't you, when you were fishing? And I think a cooked breakfast is, I bet more people have cooked breakfast on the bank than they do at home.
Yeah, do you actually think bacon proves the existence of carp gods?
Yeah, for sure. It's a staple of an English carp angler's diet, and now the Americans. So it started a bit of a debate on our official Carpcast fan page, which is a very positive, popular place to have an opinion on the Carpcast or ask us questions or anything. Go and check out that page, the official Carpcast fan page. It's a group, actually, not a page, so, which means your posts go straight to the top, unlike a business page where it goes into a separate visitors bit. So yeah, it's a good place to discuss the show, run by Heapy Bob. But this picture appeared, and obviously everybody's discussing the key ingredients of an English breakfast. And what are your key ingredients, Mark?
Well, nowadays, as I get older and in my attempt to become more healthy, my Bankside breakfast is a banana, a couple of yogurts. Do you not like that? Do you not approve?
Well, first of all, I reckon bacon is healthier than a banana. Did you know bananas are not particularly good for us?
Don't tell me that.
Google it. Everybody thinks bananas are healthy, and they're actually
not. How can they be bad? They're a fruit. They grow of the earth.
Bananas are not healthy. Google it. And do you know why we think they're healthy? It leads back to something at the start of the show.
Go on.
Edward Bernays, who was the marketing genius, he
marketed bananas?
He marketed bananas, yeah, for the American Fruit Company, I think they were called. He eventually employed some rogue members of the CIA to overthrow a government because a government decided that the Americans had a monopoly on their bananas. They bought all the land for pennies many years ago. It's an extremely interesting story. Basically, Edward Bernays was a bad guy. this is the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And it's because of him we all think bananas are healthy. He had a 5-step plan. He paid doctors to have them on the tables in waiting surgeries, film studios. He basically, the reason why we think they're healthy is because of him. If you want to know more about that story,
I want to look into this, because what makes a fruit bad for you?
The mineral contents in them, the potassium and stuff. Google are bananas good for us, and you'll find out that they are not. I would argue, and this is pseudoscience, I have zero proof, but I'd
argue. Is it bro science?
I'd argue that bacon's better. But if you are interested in that Edward Bernays story, by the way, he wrote a very famous hardcore psychology book called Propaganda, which is very famous. It's used in all sort of psychology courses and stuff. But if you just want quite a fun general background of what he did, a podcast we've mentioned many times on this show is called Stuff You Should Know. Or How Stuff Works. It's the same podcast, basically. There's hundreds of them. There's a recent one, there's a recent episode a few months ago called How Public Relations Work, and it's all about Edward Bernays. It showed you kind of all the stuff he did. He's the reason why there are more women smokers than men, because that was a campaign he did for American Tobacco. And there are, it's very clever how he used to do it. It's all based on Freudian psychology. It's basically works on insecurities and weaknesses in people, you know, like self-doubt and stuff. And that's how almost every advert you see on telly uses the same things that he introduced into marketing. it's a very interesting story anyway, how public relations work on stuff you should know. Google it. But yeah, you're a victim of it. You're a victim of his marketing in many ways, not just the bananas.
But I like bananas.
Well, I like chips, and they're not particularly good for you, so crack on. But
I think I'm going to get all my diet tips now from Joe Rogan. I can believe him. He tells the truth.
Yeah, the Joe Rogan stuff's pretty good. Another fantastic podcast, Joe Rogan Experience. So yeah, I commented on this post, the crucial ingredients, brown sauce, bacon, sausage, egg of any variety, poached, scrambled or fried, black pudding.
That's according to taste.
Pepper, toast.
Beans as well, tomatoes.
Yeah, beans. I'm not into tomatoes.
Strong coffee and a glass of fresh orange juice as well.
I think we've kind of nailed it there, don't you? I'm glad to see how our English carp habits are transferring across the pond.
Yeah, the only thing is, though, American bacon is totally different from ours. They seem to do these like long, thin strips and almost cremate them. You can eat them like crisps, which I'm not keen on.
I've seen that, like frazzles.
Yeah, exactly. I prefer our British bacon. Well, it's whatever you like, really.
If we ever visit America, we can take them some, show them the way.
Yeah, I think customers might have something to say about you getting through with a pack of Danish.
to be honest, I've got some friends that live in Ibiza, and when our group of friends go over to visit them, we basically have a suitcase full of bacon for them. We take tons and tons and tons. We've never been stopped with that bacon. But I literally, they want as much bacon as you can physically carry in your case. Because you just can't get English bacon anywhere. European bacon is, like you say, it's very sort of long and fatty. It's like streaky bacon sort of thing.
Do you like the smoked?
I don't mind it. I'm looking at a pack of smoked bacon now that I bought this morning for breakfast. I could only be bothered cooking the sausages, but I did buy smoked bacon. Yeah, I don't mind it. It just doesn't crisp. The fat doesn't crisp up quite as good. But yeah, that's that was a listener's question. We did an epic.
Everyone's passionate about full English breakfast now. I've got to be honest, I had a bacon and sausage sandwich with lashings of brown sauce this morning from Greg's. My mate Tom, who I work with, went out and did the sandwich run this morning. It was his turn. We've got another question, a listener's question from across the pond to do.
Go on.
Ask us a question.
And here we have a listener's question all the way from over in the States, from Ralph Pepe. He says, I'm an American angler new to carp fishing, but not to fishing in general. How do you deal with nuisance fish like bullheads and catfish? Should I be feeding them off, or am I better served fishing single hook baits? P.S. When will you be featuring some more anglers from the American scene? Well, I can answer that one. That is right now, because I've no experience at all with bullheads and catfish, but Dean Brooks from America. How are you, Dean?
I'm good. How are you, Mark?
Oh, I'm not bad. So, bullheads and catfish, how do you deal with them? We don't have them over here.
Well, I would, just for the European listeners, the bullheads are a type of catfish. They're smaller.
Yeah.
They're usually between 1 and 5 pound. And then catfish, we've got lots of different varieties. It depends where he is in the country. He's probably talking about channel catfish, which, again, probably go from 5 pound to about just over 20 pound. And I would equate them to similar to bream. Bream and tench, in that if you put bait in and they're in there in numbers, you're going to be plagued with them.
They're a pain then.
So it's a good question for American listeners, because we do have to deal with those nuisance species.
So can they be fed off, or?
It depends how much time, how much money. The simple question is, if there's a big population of catfish in your water, then you're almost banging your head against a brick wall trying to feed them off. I mean, we do have access to a lot of cheap particles. We can buy maize for $8-$9 a bag. That's a fiver probably. We can get lots of other particles, but and that's in a 50-pound bag. But you're talking a lot of time and effort to try and feed them off. In my experience, it all depends what he wants to fish for. If he wants to fish for catching lots of carp of any size, then yes, by all means, fill it in. You'll catch a lot of catfish as well, but you'll catch a lot of carp. If you want to catch bigger fish, I would try to avoid the catfish altogether. And that's using, one bait that not a lot of American anglers really like to use, which is boilies. We have access to them over here now. There are a lot. You can either make your own or you can buy them. And the simplest way to do it is, I don't know if this is similar to yourself, Mark, when you're plagued with bream, but it's not so much your hook bait. You know, you can fish bigger hook baits, but they'll still pick you up. It's the size of the baits you're feeding that really, help over the long run.
Yeah, I would have thought, your catfish, they've got a lot bigger mouths than our bream and tench, because, bigger baits, and even with the bream, I found, high pop-up does slow them down a hell of a lot, but,
there's a local lake that I fish that's, I've actually just moved, I'm only a mile away now, but there's a local lake I fish that's got a really big population of bullhead, and any time you put particles in, I was told, similar to tench, tigers, they won't take tigers. Well, they definitely do take tigers. I've caught them on pop-ups, I've caught them on tons of different particles. The only real way that I've avoided them, and you still catch the occasional one, is to fish, 20 to 30 mil boilies and just feed them in. And generally over the course of either a session or the course of several sessions, you'll find it's not so much they won't pick them up. Once they know that they have problems dealing with them and crushing them, especially if you use harder baits, they tend to leave you alone. That's the only real way. I'm a boilie angler anyway, even here, on wild fish. I tend to, if I can, I like to fish for bigger fish, so I'll use boilies straight away. So I tend to avoid the catfish. But if you've got a large population, single hook baits, again, yes, you're going to catch them, but, a catfish swimming by that sees a single hook bait is still going to pick it up.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to the problems we have over here. Although, when you said about hard hook baits, I had an experience with bream a few years back, and I'd spread about, only about 100 boilies over an area. And I know there was no more bait down there because I was using a boat at range when I probably shouldn't have been. I had a couple of bream in the night. You'd have thought I'd been wiped out. But some tufties came over the spot in the morning and they were diving and picking up my baits. So I'm pretty certain the bream just sucked and spat them back out.
I think like anything, that fish are, they're curious, so they'll pick them up and to see if it is food. But I think once they, with those harder baits, those, you're talking 20 mil plus, and again, catfish have big mouths, but once they're finding it hard to crush them and they can't really, they can pick them up, but they can't really eat them, eventually they just, I think they leave you alone a little bit more. I fish a prolific lake that's got tens of thousands of carp in a river called the Seneca River, which is up in New York. And that has, tens of thousands of carp, the same amount of catfish. They're very competitive. And I've been up there and fished hemp and tigers and absolutely, filled my boots with carp, but had just as many catfish. And then I've been up there having learned from that and just fished, 24 mil baits only. And had the same amount of carp, but only two or three catfish. So, it's definitely something I've found works for me. Again, it depends how much money, time and effort you want to spend.
Yeah, well, that's a brilliant answer there. Thanks, Dean, and thanks for talking to us once again on our Carpcast.
Every week we let you know what's going on in Carp Talk, the Carp Talk Digital Edition, which is cheap. It's only £1.49, available from pocketmags.com. It comes out every single Saturday, which gives you like 3 days heads up on the printed version. The printed version coming out on a Tuesday. You can download the digital version from pocketmags.com to your Apple device, Android or PC, laptop, whatever you use. If you wish to purchase a hard copy, you can get a stockist locator on the Carp Talk website, or you can just order it from your local newsagent's paper shop. But what's in this week's mag?
how many 60-pound carp are in this country right now, do you think? Because the fourth different one this year is in this week's Carp Talk.
Yes, from Wingham in Kent, fish known as Black Spot. Fourth different 60. Wow. If you want full details of it, you need to check out Carp Talk. Also in the news is Cottington's first 50, and 50s from the Dell, Frynin, Elphix, amongst other places. Wouldn't be surprised if there's a welly one in there. The weekly welly whacker, I'm not sure about. But yeah, check out on tons and tons of 50s in this week's Carp Talk.
Have you seen some of those fish from Cottingham?
I haven't done
Cottington.
No.
There's some... I can't speak for this 50, I've not seen it yet, but I'll be checking it out. But there's some lovely big plated scalers and linears from there, I've noticed.
I think 50s are now truly like the 40s were. So when I first started fishing for a 40, which was, you know, probably Elstow, you know, where we joined a lake off the back of, well, there was one 40 really, which was the mother. The twin did go 40, but you know, when I first started looking at that place, you were joining it for one 42-pound carp, and that, you know, that was considered like one of the sort of better lakes. You know, for 40s, you had to go and hunt them out. They weren't everywhere like they are now. And I think kind of 50s are like that now. What, 10 years on, 11 years on?
Yeah, man, I don't think you have to hunt a 50 out too much because the climate's different. You know, everybody knows where most fish are. They're still. Still underground, well, I say underground, you know, lesser known fish. But I remember the first time I saw the twin was on the cover of Carp Talk when Phil De Silva had caught it at £43. And I just thought, what an amazing looking fish. And I did not have a clue where it was at that point.
No. Well, one of the best ways of keeping up with fish growing in the country is Carp Talk. I mean, that was the it's a staple of news, you know. I remember Terry Hearn, we've spoke about this before, but Terry Hearn used to have hundreds of cuttings of fish, and he would track the fish, and he'd take them all from Carp Talk. You know, you'd watch him go from 20s to 30s to 40s, and then if all of a sudden they stopped appearing in Carp Talk every year, he would know that they'd either died or gone 50 or probably 40 as it was then. You know, he tracked him up through 20s and 30s, and then if the fish vanished, you know, from the press, it was probably £40 or it had died, one or the other. And you know, that was all from Carp Talk. It's the only weekly news magazine, and you know, it's a very good way of keeping up to date on fish growths and stuff and finding out where they are. You keep, you know, if you've got a keen eye, you keep seeing, you know, these fish move up through the ranks. As well as, it was all news in them days, but there's plenty of features in there now. And this week, there's Matt Woods in there of Avid Carp. He's talking about stick mixes. Briggs is in there, Steve Briggs. He takes a trip to Serriere. In France, and Steve Metcalf as well of Sigma, he takes on a new venue as well. So there's stuff to learn in there as well as keeping up with the news. And there's a weekly competition as well, Mark. We had a message actually. Did you see the message to our page?
I did. Someone had listened to the podcast, listened to me talking about the competitions that I keep forgetting to enter. He'd entered and won.
Yes, they
so
did.
Well done. Yeah, I totally forgot your name, but well done there. Yeah, well, this week.
Good. And what can you win this week?
There's a load of Fox ERS sleeping bags to be won. Keep yourself warm at night.
So you can get a digital version from pocketmags.com. That is out right now. It comes out every Saturday. And the printed version comes out on a Tuesday. Get on it. Get on the weekly news. And that's pretty much it. If you'd like to support us, the Carpcast, there are loads and loads of ways you can do it. We release some monthly extra content. You can find that on our website, which is www.thecarpcast.com. And there's loads of ways to support us on there, such as signing up, £35 a year. You can join the extra. You can buy Carpcast merchandise, hoodies, hats, T-shirts, the Carp Gods Giveth T-shirts. There's some knowledge DVDs that I produce. Or you can buy back episodes of the Carpcast Extra, or if you do sign up for the yearly one, you get all the back ones there. www.thecarpcast.com. That's it from us, Mark.
Yes, I'm going fishing now. Are you back to painting your house?
Yeah, no, it's Sunday. Sunday's an online poker day, so that's all good. I've had a good week on poker as well. I've had the best part of $5,000 in profit, so it's been a nice week.
Oh, that sounds good. It's all good.
So we'll catch you next week.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.